And we only got through, I believe, about half of them. Do you remember that? So you must find your handout from yesterday. I'm going to quickly give you the remaining 10 or 15 that we were not able to complete yesterday, so you can fill them in. When we talk about leadership, we must remember that there is a difficulty in defining leadership. However, the best way to gain a definition of something is to go back as far as possible to the original concept. Definitions are in origins. Definitions become more contaminated the further away they are removed from the origin. You would remember, those of you who were alive in the 60s and still alive now, that in the 60s they used to call money bread in America. You know, when I was a kid, we used to eat bread. And then it became money. I remember when cool used to mean it was chilly, or it was, the weather was a little bit cold. But now cool became another word. And it meant that you were in control or relaxed. And so words change in definitions the further away you remove them. Leadership has become that way. Leadership has become a problem because people have become confused about what leadership is. We call, for example, Hitler a leader. And when you really think about leadership, you begin to wonder, was he really a leader? And you might say yes, because he had people following him. So then you have a problem. Jim Jones, the tragic experience there in the nation of Guyana, we think of him as being a leader because people followed him. I mean, what is leadership? You begin to think about that. Leadership is, you know, if I was to analyze Hitler, my result of my analytical analysis would be Hitler was an expert manipulator. That's not the same as leadership. If I was to talk about someone like Mussolini, the great Italian dictator, Mussolini was not really a leader in my definition. He was a man who manipulated people through fear. Hitler did it through brainwashing. He sold a concept of a superior race that people, you know, it ain't me. It might be the other microphone. You could turn that down. He sold the concept of superior race, and people want to feel superior, so they were manipulated. So when we talk about leadership, we must go back to the original. And the only way we can find the original is keep going back until we reach to God. Everything begins with God. And the document that God has given us as His beginning is the book called the Bible. So leadership should be defined as far back as possible in the Bible. When we get to Genesis, we find God's introduction of leadership philosophy. And when you analyze that, you have to come to a conclusion that every human being was created to be a leader, because He gave every human being the responsibility for domination. That command, that mandate, that responsibility was given to man, which is a plural word. That's why we teach here that everybody possesses leadership ability. Now, whether they exercise that and even understand it, and in most cases, we abuse it, and we abuse other people with it, then that's the reason why we have confusion about leadership. Now, the characteristics that a true leader exemplifies and exhibits can be identified, because whenever there is a true leader on the scene, these characteristics are present. We can't in many ways define leadership, because it's so personal. Everybody's so different. But when it is manifested, there are certain characteristics that are consistent. And that's why we can give a list. So you can use this list actually to measure yourself against. That's why you can teach, in a sense, leadership principles. You cannot teach leadership, but you can teach leadership principles. The person who is receiving that information will have to have a personal encounter with those principles and have a revelation of leadership for themselves. Is that clear? So, I'm going to give you the remaining section of the list that I've been dealing with yesterday. And we ended on a leader envisions a better future. And I'm glad we ended there because that's what we're going to be dealing with today. How a leader develops mission and vision. The next one, characteristic of a leader, is leaders don't blame others. Say that with me. Leaders don't blame others. A true leader accepts responsibility for not only his behavior, but the consequences of any decision that is made by him or anyone else under his care. And that's a tough thing about leadership. This is a very difficult one for leaders. Those who are not true leaders find this very difficult. Human beings are what I call security conscious. We like to secure ourselves. When things go wrong, we protect our position. We protect our pride. We protect our credibility or whatever else we got left. But a true leader is willing to accept responsibility and not transfer it to other people. Now, when you understand this principle, you can become a good counselor. Are you thinking? Whenever someone comes to you with a problem, and if they are in leadership positions, or if they are in a position where they are in a lower leadership position, you can solve any problem by checking who is responsible. And that's the person who should really be taking the responsibility. All right? Some of you work for companies where there's a supervisor, or there's a CEO or someone that you work over you. They are responsible for you. And maybe you're a secretary, or you are a downline manager, or maybe you are a senior pastor under a bishop, or maybe you are an assistant pastor under a pastor. I mean, whatever relationships are, somebody has to be responsible. And that's the person we call the leader of the leaders. A true leader, no matter what happens, doesn't blame the secretary, doesn't blame the assistant pastor, doesn't blame the downline manager. A true leader takes responsibility. And I believe this is one of the areas where we fall down a lot. Jesus was very conscious of his responsibility for the disciples. And when they came to arrest Jesus, remember, he was very protective. Now the guys tried to protect him. He says, no, this is not between you and these people. This is between me and them. And then he says, who'd you come out to see? They said, we come to see Jesus. He says, I'm he. He's protecting them, taking responsibility for their safety. Next, a leader have a buck stops here attitude. A leader has a buck stop here attitude, end quote. A leader does not keep passing the ball. We got so many people with titles, but they don't make no decisions. They don't want to take responsibility. I learned something about true leadership. True leaders always are in trouble. Do you know why? Because they make decisions. People who don't make any decisions are full of criticism. If you want something done, give it to a true leader. He's not afraid to make the decisions. And I think this is a sign of the level of your leadership. Leaders not only let the buck stop with them, but they also initiate bucks. They actually begin things. They say, hey, let's do this. They say, we never done this before. Well, let's try it. But you might fail. But we don't know. We might succeed also. Leaders got this concept of let's make a decision. Let's take charge. Let me do it. I mean, if no one else is going to do it, let's get it done. We mentioned yesterday that leaders aren't afraid of failure because to a leader, failure is simply a classroom where he learns of one new way not to do it. Next, a leader want to win. That's an attitude of a leader, characteristic. A leader wants to win. She wants to win. A leader has an attitude which says, I am going to succeed. So they keep trying. They want to win. And you can tell a person who's a true leader, they never have a pessimistic attitude. In spite of all the negative environments around them, they always get this attitude that we have to succeed in this. So they keep trying. Next, a leader. Leaders are curious and flexible. A true leader has a curiosity spirit and flexibility. Curious and flexible. That's the next one. If you are a leader, you will be inquisitive. That's why a true leader is always reading. Write this down. A leader is a reader. You know, a leader always want to know something new. They never tried it before. Let's try it. They're very curious. But they are also flexible. Flexible means that a leader is not afraid of doing things a different way. Or they actually have an adaptable spirit. They may not even adopt things, but they'll adapt to things. Leaders are flexible. That is why there are very few leaders in the world. Because most people I meet are very straight-jacket people. You know, this is the way it's always been done. This is the way we're going to do it. Well, you know, leaders don't think that way. Leaders are very curious. They like to test the envelope and push the envelope, we call it. They like to go beyond the safety zone. They're always trying to see how far they can go to make something better. They're very curious. Are you that way? Think about it. And then flexibility. Flexibility has to do with elasticity in your emotions, in your mentality, in your social acceptability. How broad can you go when things change? Leaders manage change very successfully because they're very flexible. If something doesn't work, a leader doesn't panic. A leader just simply says, well, let's find another way. You know, God is the greatest example of this characteristics. God's purposes are permanent, but his plans are flexible. Write that down. God's purposes are permanent. Your purpose is your intent. A leader never changes her intent. A leader never changes his intent. Why? Because a leader has the intent as a destination. It's his destiny or her destiny. But the plan to get there may change. God did that with the fall of man, remember? When man fell, God didn't panic. God just came up with another plan. It was called the redemption plan. God started with what? A creation plan. He created the thing and he says, okay, here's our destination, dominion over the whole world. Well, the project fell apart. The program was destroyed. God didn't panic. Why? He's a leader. He's flexible. He's adaptable. So God says, okay, tell you what we're going to do. We're going to use all the mess and create a new program called redemption. So he turns sin into a redeeming element. He created out of this fallen man a new creature. What's a new creature? A saved person. There never was a saved person before Adam fell. So God used the corrupt product to create a new product called a redeemed, saved person. That's why you are called a new creature in Christ. Adam was new before he fell, but then God made something new. He never had a saved creature before. Are you all with me? That's the way you're supposed to be as a leader. Things change. I mean, you go to one bank and the bank doesn't give you any money. You don't throw your plan away. You don't throw the purpose away. There are 20 different ways to succeed in life, and you've only been trying one. Creativity. You want to see Jesus go to work? One blind man came to Jesus. Jesus says, okay, tell you what. For you, I'm going to touch your eyes and heal you. So he touched him. Next one came. He says, you, different plan. I'm going to use some mud with some spit. I'm going to fix you. Completely flexible. Can't figure out what he's going to do next. Yeah. He says, okay, I'll meet you all to the other side. And then he goes walking on the water. I mean, they're trying to figure out, he can catch another boat. You see, you got them all figured out. No, he can catch another boat. He got your mind blown. You need to be that way. Let me give you an example, too, about being flexible. Now, the people in our ministry here and our organization, I think they figured this out with me by now. I am not afraid to change what ain't working. You know, we were trying to have a successful Sunday evening service because, you know, people, some people work in the day and they can't come to meetings in the morning, so we want to have a service for them. Plus, we want to, my desire is to help our people get as much knowledge as possible and train them. And, of course, the Bible says that the more we fellowship together and don't neglect the assembling of ourselves together, it's better for the development. So Sunday evenings, we used to try to have, you know, services on Sunday evenings. And it's tough for people. You know, you go to work. I mean, you go home late from morning services sometime, you know, 1:30, 2 o'clock. And you don't have much time for your family and so forth. And I'm aware of that because I need time with my family too. So we came up with a different idea altogether. Because, you know, the services on Sunday evenings, you know, the right lights are running, air conditioning running, but, you know, the attendance is not as successful as I would like. And so, you know, you begin to become actually a deficit, which is bad leadership. So I tried five or six different approaches. The last one we did this year was very successful. And that is, I decided we ain't having no more Sunday evening services. So I introduced a brand new idea called an institute. And I chose specific subjects that would be of interest to the people, things that they could learn. And then it was only held like, you know, 3 classes or 4 classes. And then they were off for the next 2 months. Well, I mean, we had the best attendance we ever had all year. But it was completely new. It was not called a church service. There was no long worship. It was an institute. And people came. We gave handouts in every session. You know, it was intensive teaching. And people came. And people gave offerings to take care of the cost of the running the building. And people were blessed. And I mean, the place was filled. And so you think, well, you know, maybe your Sunday service is just a burden to you as a pastor. But don't be afraid. Don't follow the system. Don't be trapped by tradition. Maybe the folks that don't want to come to no church service on Sunday evening. So you got to come with something more creative. Be flexible. Now, we run into a problem. And the problem is a lot of the other churches wait for our conferences and institutes. So when we introduced the institute idea, a bunch of people from other churches showed up on Sunday evenings in our place. You know? And then all of a sudden, membership started growing. So, you know, we don't want to steal members, but people came because it wasn't a church service. They were having a church service in their church. They wanted to come to get some teaching. So our members came, and then all these other people from other churches came. And it became a very successful program, and it still is even to this day. So leaders are willing to be flexible. They're curious. They try new things. If it ain't working, throw it away. Next, a leader tests assumptions constantly. And this is related to what I'm just talking about. A leader tests assumptions constantly. A leader is always checking to see if what he or she expected is happening. Don't assume, as a leader, that it's working. Check it. And if it ain't working, then you got to change your strategy. Next, a leader does not over-control. A leader does not over-control. What we mean by that is a leader actually gives people the freedom to pursue the assignment he or she gave them. Here's the way I'd put that again. A leader does not manage people. A leader manages resources. A true leader develops people. So you could put it this way. You develop people, you manage resources. Most leaders get in trouble, so-called leaders, get in trouble because they try to manage people. Do you know that you cannot be managed? Don't you hate that word? I mean, you managing me? What are you talking about? Controlling my time, controlling my creativity, you controlling my brain, my intellect, you controlling how far I can dream about this situation. That's witchcraft. We call it management, but it's sophisticated witchcraft. A leader develops people. That's why they give them room to use their imagination and room to solve problems themselves and give them room to make mistakes and give them room to make mistakes easily so they can feel comfortable making mistakes. You see, if you're going to be successful with people, you got to give them permission to make mistakes. Nothing can kill creativity faster than perfectionism. A true leader makes it easy for you to make a mistake without being intimidated, because you know that the mistake is not going to destroy the relationship. That's why Jesus was such a successful leader. The disciples made mistakes all through those 3.5 years. I mean, they kept on fumbling and blundering, and he just sit, just calmly say, you know, let me tell you a story. And then he tell him a story to try and get rid of the mistake, you know. And they kept falling into traps and doing things that are dumb. But he just kept on saying, I'll tell you another parable. And he just kind of made it easy, so the guys were not afraid to try new things. Most of you work in companies that are full of fear. So that's why you only do what you're told, and then you wait for the other assignment. Because you're not being led, you're being managed. You manage a copier. You don't manage people. You manage paper and paper clips, but you don't manage people. You manage the budget, but you don't manage people. You develop people, because people are dynamic. People are leaders. This is how leaders think. A true leader develops people. Next, a true leader gives workers leeway to act. This is connected to what I just talked about. A true leader gives the workers or the followers room, leeway to act. You know, I could always tell a true leader. A true leader gets angry when you keep coming to her asking how. That's a true leader. A true leader gets angry when you keep coming to him asking him, what am I supposed to do next? How am I supposed to do this? That makes a leader mad. Because a true leader wants you to act. Even if you make a mistake. As a matter of fact, leaders get a joy out of helping you to correct your mistake. That's where that joy is. They give you room. Some of you needed to do that with your children. You try to manage your children. That's why they're turning out so terribly. You need to develop your children. Don't manage them. Give them room to make mistakes. One of the best ways to become a good parent is to keep remembering your own childhood. Some of y'all are still there. Next, a leader. Oh, you ain't gonna like this one. A leader tolerates and sometimes invite dissent. Dissent. How's that for a surprise? A leader, a true leader, tolerates and sometimes invites dissent. Because a leader, a true leader, I keep saying true leader, a true leader is so secure, she is not afraid of dissent. Dissent to a true leader is an important part of leadership because it's the way of feedback. The best way to find out how well you're leading is to ask those who you're leading. Jesus did this, didn't he? He was sharp, man. He was with these guys for 2.5 years, going on for the last year, and he turns around and he says, what do you say I am? What do you think about me? And man, he was so excited that they finally got the message. He was the Christ. He said, man, you guys heard from God. And then he says, who do others say I am? And they were all wrong, weren't they? Yeah. Some of you are afraid when people start complaining in your organization, in your church, in your business, when they start murmuring or whatever. Listen, dissent is one of the greatest blessings to a leader because it helps you to check your loyalty and commitment to your vision and to the people. We were talking to a couple of people, yesterday, and they were having a little challenge in their organization where the leader was becoming out of touch with the council. And that usually happens when you have this problem of dissent. You know, people start complaining and the leader won't listen because he's afraid, insecure, so he goes and hides. If you haven't seen your pastor for a long time, something's going on in the organization. If you don't talk to your boss or to your pastor, if you're an assistant pastor and your pastor avoids you, there's a problem. There's dissent going on. Don't deny the dissent mechanism. Don't say it doesn't exist. Don't ignore the concerns, I want to use the word complaint, of those who you appointed. I'm going to say it again. You better write that down. Don't ignore the concerns or the complaints of those you appointed. If you appointed someone, it means that you trust their judgment. And if they start to complain and begin to show signs of dissent, don't ignore them. Listen to them. Because they usually represent an undercurrent. But a leader is not afraid of it. Now, a guy or girl who is not a true leader, they're afraid of dissent, so what do? They then overbear, they over-control. They shift into control. See? And so we have this problem of people literally being oppressed now because the leader doesn't want to hear anything about it. I like Moses. He's a great guy, isn't he? Moses had an experience with dissent. He came through his own sister and his brother, Aaron. What did Moses do? Very nice guy. Moses listened to them, you know. And then Moses answered them. Moses says, I didn't ask for this job. So you got a problem. Tell you what, let's go visit God. Let's go talk to the boss. That was a bad idea for Miriam. But Moses was never angry at them, was he? Matter of fact, he said, Lord, don't hurt them, hurt me instead. What kind of security does this man have? Pure security. I mean, the guy was secure. Even to the point where he was willing to protect the dissenters. Are you that kind of leader? What a quality of leadership. Next, and coming down to the end here, leaders believe they can affect the world for better. I call this the destiny attitude. A true leader has a belief that she can affect the world for the better. That he can affect the world for the better. I have found out something about leaders. Leaders think global. They think generational. That's a little bit more important word there. Leaders do not believe that what they're doing is just for them. They believe that they have a part to play in history. And I want you to capture that in this seminar. When you leave here, I want you to understand that you are important. When you read the Bible, you'll be amazed of the simple people who changed the world. I was thinking, for example, things like, remember Jesus sent the disciples to the town one time, and he says, when you go to that town, you will meet a woman with a jug on her head going for water. Talk to her and tell her to show you the place where I will have the Passover with you. Now, this is a real deep thing, you know. This woman knows nothing about history. She knows nothing about what's going on, and yet she has an appointment with destiny. She had to get up that morning and go for water. Now, in those days, only women went to the well. Okay? Women went for water. That was the women's job in the day of Jesus. Even as far back as Abraham, women are the ones that went for the water. That's why, you know, when a man went for a wife for his master, who's that? Isaac? You know, there was a damsel at the well. Why? They're the ones that will go for water. So it's a very cultural thing. So Christ knew it had to be a woman going for this water. Now this woman had to get up that morning, put a jug on her head, and walk at the right time of the day to rendezvous with the disciples, because she had an assignment in life. Her assignment was to provide the place for Christ to institute a supper we are still taking part in today. Can you be that important just as a woman with a water jug? Sense of destiny. How about the guy who woke up the morning and took his mule, his donkeys, to town? He took the coat. He had to take the coat and tie it to a specific post. Why? Because somewhere in the book of Isaiah it was prophesied that he'd come riding on a coat. So this guy, a thousand years later, he had to be ready on time. I wonder what you're supposed to do that you think is so simple that's going to change history. I was born not too far from this building, in the poor side of this island. Three-bedroom house with 11 children. So you know where I slept, because I had 7 sisters. So, you know, women always get the preference. And who would have thought, out of that wooden floor on floor 4 blocks with rats and roaches, was a young man like me. I wonder who you really are. We're so quick to think we are not important to history. A leader has a sense of contribution to his generation. So whatever you do, whatever you are born to do is important to all of us. Tell your neighbor, you need me. And tell him, you'll see. Next, a true leader sees opportunity in challenge. A true leader sees opportunity in challenge. The spirit of a leader is a strange spirit. A leader is never taken aback by disappointment. I'll tell you a little secret. A true leader strives on difficulty. That gets his adrenaline flowing. That's where she gets her passion. Life is boring when there's nothing to fight against. Y'all can't handle that kind of stuff. Some of y'all are praying to come out of problems. I can't wait for the next one. Why? That's the only way I could get my potential worked out. I need something to put a demand on me. I did a teaching. I want you all to maybe pick up some of these tapes around here. I did a teaching on the kingdom ways to solve problems. It's a very powerful set of teaching in the kingdom series. You may check those in the tape or the bookstore. And this series really changed not only my life, but changed the church, the people who got that series. And I taught in that lesson, as I studied, how Jesus thought. I mean, his thinking was amazing. In every problem is a solution. That's the way he thought. The solution is in the problem. Write that down. One day that's going to make sense to you. Whatever the problem is, it has the solution in it. I didn't know that until I studied kingdom thinking. Jesus had these people who were hungry, remember? Over 5,000 people hungry. And Christ says to the disciples, okay, feed them. What do you mean feed them? Feed them. And they said, Master, to feed them, we'd have to go to town. That's 3 days away. By the time we come back, they'd be starving. By the way, that statement means that they had money. You all missed that. See? You all thought that Jesus was a poor guy with a bunch of poor guys. The guys had money. They said, Master, we go to town and buy enough for these people. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of money. They didn't say we couldn't buy it. He said, just it'll take too long. So Christ says, what do you have? And I believe that's the most powerful business question in history. Please get that tape. It'll bless you. We always talk about what we don't have. He says, what do you have? The solution is right here in this spot. Let's see what you have. And they said, all we have is. And that's usually your answer. And his answer was, that's enough. Give him a hand. That's powerful, isn't it? We should clap right there. I mean, who would have thought that two loaves, three loaves and two fishes is enough? He says, it is. It's right here. The problem is solved right here. And he goes inside the loaves and he splits the atom and it begins to multiply. He goes into the fish and he splits the atom and the fish multiplied. That's really what he did. And everybody ate. A leader thinks that way. Leader says, okay, all right, let's see. Profits are down. The budget was not met at that last function. The creditors are calling for their monies. Okay, let's panic and run. That's not a leader. Leader, okay, let's sit down now. Let's see what we got. You know, most of your bills could be paid by things you could sell in your house that you ain't used for 20 years. You never thought about it, eh? People who live in the rich areas in your country, the rich areas, watch them now. You think they don't have any needs. They got needs. So, have you ever seen a rummage sale in the poor area? No. I'm giving you some wisdom. The rich man takes the stuff he don't use anymore, puts it in the garage, put a sign up, and the poor people go buy them, and he gets the money and buys what he wants. Why? Because the answer is in his house. Yeah. So he still leads you around in your poverty. You'll get it after I'm gone. My time is gone. I got 2 minutes. I haven't talked about vision yet. Okay. Next. A leader makes instinctive decisions based on experience and information. A true leader makes instinctive decisions based on experience and information. I want to recommend to you, my friends, that you really consider this one. A leader lives on instincts. When decisions are demanded instantly. Let me tell you what is one of the most difficult things, and this is my experience talking, is people delay decisions. A poor leader keeps looking for more information and more information, calling another meeting and calling another meeting and waiting for this. That's not a true leader. especially when there's a time constraint. Some of you work in companies where you are frustrated because things you've been trying to do for the last 6 months still ain't done because the person who's supposed to make the decisions to get it done is still holding a meeting to discuss it 6 months later. Anybody here? I'm talking to some of you pastors especially. Make decisions for the people, man. No, what frustrates a true leader is sometimes a true leader gives you an assignment and they go away. And then they come back and they ask you, is it finished? And you go, but I was waiting for you to come back to tell. Now listen, that's it. You know, but for the grace of God, you are fired. I believe one of the curses of being a pastor is that you have defied your members, so sometimes you get a little mercy. See, and the members always say, you're a Christian. You're my pastor, you gotta have mercy. Well, I'm getting better at it. I'm getting better. See, Jesus taught me a lesson. Jesus said, our owner had a manager. Luke 16, right? And he gave him an assignment. And when he came back to see how he did, the manager started talking about why he didn't do what he was supposed to do. I like what you said. He says, and the owner fired him. Another place Jesus talks about management, and he says, agree with your adversary quickly while you are in the way with him. You got a relationship with him. He says, if not, you will be tried, condemned, put in jail, and then he says, you will stay there until you pay everything. Now, that's tough. In other words, you have to carry the penalty if you don't act properly. We're talking about, give me one more chance, Pastor. You know, the Lord say mercy is better than judgment. Yeah, but they say mercy and judgment are the same coin. So I had mercy for 3 years. Judgment is now at home. You may now leave, go find yourself another job. Some of the worst people to work for you are Christians. Amen. And finally, leaders take time to teach people and to train people. Leaders take time to teach people and to train people. I want to add a little appendix here. Leaders take time to teach people their point of view. And that's important. A leader does not just assume that the people or the workers know what he or she wants. You need to take time to tell people. Now me, I'm a pretty prolific writer, you know. I like to write things down. So most of the people in our staff and those who work for me, you know, I write, like, I take the whole vision and put it on paper and I give it to them, details. Then I say, okay, any questions? And usually because I'm a pretty prolific writer, there's very few questions because it's so detailed. But you've got to take that time. And believe me, to write that document may take me weeks, trying to articulate the detail of my spirit on paper so that they don't have to guess too much. Most of you who are youth pastors or, you know, choir leaders or something, you ain't know what the pastor wants. All you know is when he complains. Right? We need people who teach people their point of view. That's what a leader does. Jesus, boy, was he an expert at this? Constantly taking his disciples aside, teaching them. I mean, he didn't leave no room for guessing. He sat them down. He taught them details about the kingdom and what he wanted to accomplish and how he wanted it done and who he wanted to send. And I mean, everything was clear. And then he would literally open up for questions, didn't he? And every time they asked a question, you know, listen, if you don't want a message, don't ask Jesus a question. Read the Bible. Most of the New Testament four Gospels are answers to questions. Study the four Gospels. Most of them are answers to questions. One time they asked him one question. The guy answered in three chapters. They said, "Oh, Master, when will the end come?" He said, "I was waiting for this one." And the guy preached on the end times and preached on the fall of Israel, you know, of the temple, and preached on, you know, the sheep and the goats, and preached on the great white throne. I mean, the guy went in a big, long discourse. When he finished, he said, "Now you got it?" They still didn't get it. They were still looking for him to come in the first chapter of Acts. And he said, "You still don't get it, did you?" So he sits down and he teaches them again in the book of Acts. Look, the kingdom of God doesn't come by observation. And only the Lord, the Father, knows the time of the establishment of my throne on earth. So, you know, he begins to teach. In other words, a true leader does not get angry when the followers want more information. Some people are afraid to go in and see the boss. And you know what's bad about that? Because then they start assuming things and mess up the company. And sometimes that's the boss's fault, because the boss doesn't have the attitude of a true leader, which says, "Hey, my door is open. You can come talk to me anytime. Here's the assignment. If you have any problems, check with me." That's a true leader. It's teaching the followers. Okay, I want to close because of time, and I'm excited about this next session coming up. But I want to close with just two items, and then tomorrow we are going to pick up on 12 management skills every leader should have. These 12 management skills, I hope everybody is present. Because what I'm going to teach is to show you how to stay out of failure tomorrow morning. How to stay out of failure. 12 management skills. Now, I must be honest, most of the people I've met know very little about management, especially Christians, especially those who work in church ministry. Pastors are very, very bad at management. So we're going to talk about management tomorrow. Practical management. There's going to be some important things I'm going to list. But let me just close this session with these two words. Mission and vision. And then we'll pick up with the next session. Write those two words down, please. There's a difference between a mission and a vision. Now, someone asked a question some time ago, and I heard it again yesterday. Someone asked a question, what is more important? The vision or the visionary? I'm now going to give you the answer. Write it down. The vision is more important than the visionary. The vision is more important than the visionary. Vision creates the visionary. Vision precedes the visionary. Vision comes before the leader. Vision creates the leader. That is why you cannot teach leadership in a university. You cannot gain leadership by taking courses on management and leadership skills and administration skills and organizational techniques. That doesn't create a leader. A leader is created by vision. Write that down, please. Vision is more important than the leader. Visionaries are dispensable. Vision is not. Here's the Bible take on this. The Bible says, without a leader, gotcha. See, but that's the way you think. The Bible says without a what? A vision, the people perish. The people don't really need you to be successful. They need a vision. Leaders come and go, but the vision is constant. That is why you can die and still be successful after your death. If you did a good job transferring the vision. Write this down. Vision is bigger than the visionary. That's why Jesus leaving earth was easy for Jesus. His vision was bigger than his death and resurrection. So he left. And the vision is still going on 2,000 years later and growing. You want to hear his prayer? Interesting prayer. Jesus spent 90% of his time with the disciples. 90%. I did an analysis of the four Gospels, and I concluded that 90% of four Gospels is his time with the disciples. 10% is with the public. Come on, fellas, talk to me. You got a problem right away. How much time do you spend with your leaders in your church? Every Sunday morning for 1.5 hours? That's it? How much time do you spend with your employees in your business? You don't spend no time with them. You go to work. So I tell them. You go for lunch and come back on time and then go at 5. In other words, you don't spend no time with the people. We missed it. Every time he called them aside, he had one lesson for 3.5 years. The kingdom of God is like. That's my vision. And in John chapter 17, he's about to die. Right? I mean, the guy got just a few days. He knows it. So he calls them together and he begins to pray. You want to hear his prayer? Interesting prayer. He says, Father, I pray not for the world. Now, wait a minute. I thought the world was the market. He said, but I'm not praying about the market. He knew he was successful in transferring this thing. He said, I pray only for these you've given me. How many? 12. The guy came to win the world, but only selected 12 people. How are you doing? Christ did not want a big church. He wanted a team of leaders. One of our problems in the 21st century is we got big, fat, lazy churches. Big, mega, babysitting incubators. Do you know how large my church is? I have 15 members. One of them is my wife. What makes this ministry run successfully? We have a meeting that is held every Tuesday night and has been held every Tuesday night, every week, every Tuesday night for the last 19 years. That's my church. So I go, I could die now and this vision would still be fulfilled. I travel and the ministry grows in my absence. There's no competition, no threat, no nothing, no division. Never had a division in this church. 19 years. Same board members from day one. I mean, what's the secret here? Transferring a vision. Don't force the people to join you. Transfer vision. I think you all know this, right? The prefix die, it means two. And vision means single sight. Interesting word. So when you put die in the front of vision, you have what? And that's what causes division. Two visions in the same house. And whenever there's two visions in the same house, it's the leader's fault. It's always the leader's fault. Jesus was so sure of his success. Here's the way he prayed. He says, Father, I pray not only for these, but for those who will believe this vision through them. Why? They got it. I can leave now. I only need 11. I lost one. Usually lose a member. Ratio is what? 1%. But he says, I'm so successful, I could die and the vision won't die. That's the point. The vision is bigger than the visionary. What is vision? Vision is a glimpse of purpose. Secondly, vision is a preferred future. A preferred future. Thirdly, vision is a description of your destiny. You actually can describe it. Vision is different from mission. Let me just give you this quickly. Mission is general. Let me give you the characteristics here. A mission statement is a broad, general statement about who you wish to reach and what you hope to accomplish. That's your mission. Who you wish to reach and what you hope to accomplish. That's your mission. Your vision is different. Vision is specific, detailed, customized, distinctive, and unique. I want to repeat those words. Very important. Vision is specific, detailed, customized, distinctive, and unique. It allows the leader to say no to good opportunities. It provides direction. It empowers people for service and it facilitates productivity. Vision is really the motor of an organization. Now, mission is different. Mission is general. The best description I can have of mission is the Great Commission. If I ask you as a company, what is your vision? You say, oh, to sell food. You ain't going to be in business too long. If I ask you as a pastor, what is your vision? You say, oh, to save the lost at any cost. You're going to lose. You ain't going to make it. If I ask you as a pastor, what is your vision? And you say, my vision is to win the city for Jesus. You ain't going to make it. Look at a vision. Look at the definition. Look at it. Can you save the lost at any cost with that particular list of words? So what is your vision? Well, my vision is to win the people of this nation to Jesus. You're gonna lose. You're gonna fail. What you gave me as an answer was not a vision. You gave me a mission. Mission is what? General. The best description of it is let me ask a question. How many churches in the world are supposed to save the lost at any cost? All of them. How many churches are supposed to win their city for Jesus? All of them. What's your vision? To preach the gospel to the lost. How many churches are supposed to preach the gospel to the lost? All of them. You ain't unique. You're not distinctive. You're not specific. So that's why you got to do some researching. Find out what is my role in the mission. The best description I always give is the fast food places. You know, you have Kentucky Fried Chicken, McDonald's, Pizza Hut, Denny's. What else you got? And Burger King, all right? Have you noticed they always, whenever they build one of those, they look for the other? You ever wonder why? Now, usually, if someone built a church next to your church, that's enemies. Hello? I mean, if a guy comes in your neighborhood and built a church, what's your first thought? You're encroaching on my territory. What are you talking about? Your territory? Someone builds a house right down the road from you, build a restaurant right down from you, or build a shoe store right next to you, or build a church next to you, there's big problem, jealousy and hatred and deceit and bitterness, and you undermine them and you start talking about them and advertise against them. Now, look at Burger King and Pizza Hut and McDonald's and Denny's. They don't avoid each other, they find each other. And they build right next to each other, right across the street, right beside. And all of them are billionaires. Now you're trying to figure out, how come they're making it? Because the children of this world are wiser than the children of light. What makes them so successful? They figured out what the Word of God talks about concerning vision. Okay. Now, you got Burger King, McDonald's, Pizza Hut, Denny's. Ask them a question. What is your mission? All of them have the same answer. To feed people. We are in the food business. Is that right? We feed hungry stomachs. That's it. Everyone has the same mission in their life. To feed people. Now you ask them, what is your vision? Now we got distinctions. We got problems here. Right. And that is, they begin to say, well, Burger King says, well, we are the Whopper people. That's our vision. We have this Burger thing we call the Whopper. We're the only ones that can whop you. You want a Whopper, you got to come to us. Kentucky Fried Chicken says, hey, we ain't into Whoppers. We into what? Chicken. You want chicken? You got to find us. Pizza says, hey, we ain't into chicken nor Whoppers. We into what? Pizza. You want pizza? You got to come to us. Denny said, well, we ain't into burgers and pizza. We into what? Grand Slam. You want breakfast? We'll breakfast you at midnight. Yeah.
Mercy. Specific. Bro.
That's their vision. McDonald's says, well, we ain't into Whopper, but we got a Mac.
Yeah, Big Mac.
We'll Big Mac you into submission. Yeah. So they're all successful. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. If your church is not being successful or your business is not successful, check if you have a specific vision. If you're going to sell shoes, don't just sell shoes. You better decide what's going to be your vision for shoes. You know, Nike does not sell Sunday shoes. They're smart. Pomacans sell Sunday shoes. They don't focus on athletic shoes. What's your church focusing on? What's your business about? If you're going to sell food, don't just sell food. You got to be known for something. In this ministry, our vision is very clear. You see that statement there? Transforming followers into leaders. That's what we're known for in the whole country. So you can't compete with a vision. There's no competition. So you think, you'll never see McDonald's on TV saying, do not visit Burger King. They are terrible burgers. Kentucky never attacks Pizza Hut. You ever seen it on the radio or television? No. But you do it publicly on the radio with your station programs. Don't attend that church. Don't attend that. Don't go that. What's wrong with you? Because you're insecure. You don't know your own vision.